Made it through a week. It's Friday. Hi, Mary Jane Pop here. Welcome to Pop Off on this beautiful Friday. I don't know how it is in your part of the country, but man, are we sweltering on the West Coast. I know you're going to say, oh my God, but it's going to be like 106 in the Sacramento area today. Oh yeah, yeah. But you know, we always use an excuse. We have dry heat, so we're not going to sweat nearly as much as some of the people back east, but it's hot. I mean, when you say, if it's 90, 95, ain't too bad. But when you start talking 105, 106, 107, that's downright hot. And I always kind of warn people because I actually did weather a few years back myself. And you have to look at it this way. Unfortunately, it is a problem for everybody because guess what? Whatever we have on the West Coast, it is going to move across the country slowly but surely, and it's going to get to you. So in the winter time, we have rain. By the time it gets to you, it's snow. In the summer, we have high temperatures. When it gets to you, it's just going to be doggone high temperatures, no matter how you look at it. But anyway, we made it through Friday. Looking forward to a great weekend. Hope you've got a lot of good plans. And we've got some great information and some fun things to talk about on Pop Off today, including this one fascinated me. It normally doesn't fit what I talk about, you know, how to feel better, do better, be better, and all that. But I had to have him on. This is the man. Whenever you get on a 747, you know, the big jumbo jets, you wonder, who the heck came up with this idea? The man who actually led the team at Boeing is going to be on with us today. The man was born in 1921. I thought, what a fascinating conversation. They're actually coming out with a 450-seat jumbo jet, Boeing jumbo jet, in November, and so it's kind of like an anniversary type of thing. So he's going to be with us. We'll find out about that whole travel, I mean, that whole journey of his. And talking about traveling, maybe Marty Davidson's going to join us later. How many times have you gone on vacation and traveling with others? It could be your kids, it could be your in-laws, it could be friends, and you just wish they'd stayed home, or maybe even that you stayed home. Well, we have got some information for you so that you can have a good trip this summer if you're planning your trip and you've already got it planned and you've got people going with you. We've got some tips for you. Also, don't forget, please, I want to hear from you. Email me, maryjane@popoff.com, and that's P-O-P-P-O-F-F, maryjane@popoff.com. You have some ideas for the show? Comments on the show, you want some topics that you'd like to hear, don't worry. I mean, I have got a stall of people that is incredible, all the way to bestsellers and doctors and lawyers and you name it. We'll get answers for you, but I just need to know if you have some topics. Because remember, Pop Off, it's not only my show. This is our show. We do this together, and so I always want to give you the topics and that you want to have. And let me know where you're emailing me from, simply because it makes it better for me to know, because eventually I may be coming out your way. I've got a book coming out called Marilyn, Joe, and Me. It's going to be out later this summer, and it is a fascinating book. These are the memoirs of June DiMaggio, who's the niece of Joe DiMaggio, and we're going to be doing a book tour. And so we'll actually be taking the show, the Pop Off Radio Show, with us on the book tour. Who knows? We might be in your town. So I want to build a community of folks, yourself included, and we'll let you know when we're going to be coming to town. Speaking about good things in life and how to feel good and be better, boy, there's something called osteoporosis that seems to be growing by leaps and bounds. We'll find out why on Pop Off.
In the heat of the night, I've got trouble.
Uh, tell you, you got troubles for sure when more and more women and even men at younger ages are getting it. It's called osteoporosis. Now, we think of it when we see little old ladies with a dowager hump. We call it porous bones. Old ladies' disease. Well, not really anymore. Not when men and women have to face it in their, are you ready for this? 30s and 40s. It's frightening. Well, Renee Newman knows all about this thing called osteoporosis. She had to face it herself. And she addresses it in her book called Osteoporosis Prevention. Renee, what a pleasure to have you with us on Pop-Off.
And it's a pleasure to be on your show, Mary Jane.
And isn't it true? Osteoporosis, they're finding it in their 30s and 40s. That's doggone scary.
Yes, and for one thing, you have models and young people that are trying to diet excessively, and so they don't get adequate nutrition, and that leads to bone loss. But then diseases can cause it. But decreasing levels of hormones, too, are a major cause, and that's why women at middle age, and even men, too, have to be very concerned about osteoporosis.
You bet. Well, we always used to think of it as, you know, when you get into menopause, you better start watching for osteoporosis. But when you have kids in their 30s, I mean, that's a kid in their 30s, and they're starting to face it. But like you said, nutrition, exercise, a whole bunch of things are causing problems. Because isn't exercise also a good indicator that it does help you to build better bones?
Yes, exercise is key to keeping your bones strong. You know, they've done studies on college students where they've had them lay in bed for 1 month. They've given them supplements and good nutrition, but they just don't move for a month. They lose up to 2% per month. So that shows that your body has to keep active, and you need to exercise your entire body, too. And you should especially focus on the weak areas. If, for example, you want to increase the bone density of your hips, do site-specific hip exercises such as single leg lifts and squats. Have a professional show you how to do them and check your form. Walking is a good overall type of exercise, but unfortunately it's not very effective at increasing hip bone density because it targets the feet and legs, not the hips.
You've got to be more intense.
Right, and you know, one of the easiest hip exercises you can do is just to stand repeatedly from a seated position over and over.
Really?
Yes, and that's an easy one for seniors to do, too.
Gosh, that's too simple, Renee.
Yes.
You can do that while you're watching television.
Right, just stand up and sit down and maybe one time have one foot in front of the other leg and then switch legs. But that's a good way to make sure that you can always stand up and have muscles in your hips.
Now, when did you find out you had osteoporosis?
Well, I didn't have osteoporosis. I have what they call osteopenia, which is a low bone mass, and it's, you know, means that your bones are not in the normal range, the density of them, but they're not yet full-blown osteoporosis.
You're heading in the wrong direction.
Right, and that's why it's good not to wait until you're 65 to get tested. And my mother had osteoporosis and broke her hip when she was 62, and her doctor told me, you know, I better get tested. And the first time I was borderline, but then the second time it showed that I lost more than 7% in my hip. And so that made me really start taking action to find out what I could do to not end up like my mother.
Well, curious now, we need to talk about this it's a bone density scan because they've got these ones that you put in the back of your foot into, and those don't tell the whole story, do they?
No, for one thing, they only measure your heel, but your bone density can vary throughout your body, and you lose bone at different rates throughout your body. You tend to lose bone in your spine and your hips before you do in the extremities.
Because I actually did the bone density scan, and it only takes about 10 or 15 minutes. It's nothing major.
Right. It's very easy. Out of curiosity, did they give you a copy of your bone density report?
Oh, yeah. I always ask for all that. I actually had some problems. I was osteopenia in one and actually over the border on osteoporosis in another part, one of my hip and then in part of my spine. And I took measures like you did, and I want to find out what you did. But I started the exercising, but I also did some vitamin supplements that were calcium, because you know what I found out? Calcium, we always say, helps you not to get osteoporosis, but my body was not absorbing calcium. I had a problem.
Right, and you need other supplements along with the calcium to absorb it. And one of the things they're finding out is especially the importance of vitamin D3 in your diet. They used to recommend like 400 to 800 international units per day. Now they've increased that to 800 to 1,000.
Oh, really?
And recently I was at the World Congress for Osteoporosis, and that was one of the major subjects that they talked about, the importance of getting vitamin D3. But then also you need other nutrients along with that, you know, such as magnesium to balance out the calcium.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are...
boron.
Yeah, boron, zinc, vitamin B12, vitamin K, all of these are important.
Okay, so you have to have, it's a structure of things. It's not just one thing that's going to solve your problem.
Right.
Gotcha. And I turned it around, the last bone scan, and it's so funny because I have a traditional doctor. And she said, I told her, well, I'm taking these extra supplements, and she said, well, you know, what the heck. Because she suggested, are you ready for this? Fosamax, and I said, get thee away from me with Fosamax. That stuff's got so many side effects, it's worse than having to face the osteoporosis. So I didn't do the Fosamax. I did the supplements. I did the exercise. Next bone, which they can only do it like every year, or you know, sometimes the insurances won't let you do it every 2 years, but I went ahead and did it the next year. And I came back, and I took the osteopenia back. I took the osteoporosis back. And she said on the bone scan test was, keep up the good work.
Well, you found out what to do.
Yeah, I made her a believer, you know, that sometimes natural supplements are going to do, and I'm not saying always, but doggone, that's worth a try before I go to these heavy, scary medications.
Yes, you should always try natural methods first.
Now, what did you do then?
I did follow my doctor's advice, and I took Fosamax.
Did you?
Yes, but it wasn't enough to... stop the bone loss in my spine, and then that's when I started to do strength training because I was afraid to do it. I thought it would hurt my back, and I did general exercise and I did a lot of running, and you know, it's sort of through research that I discovered that is not sufficient, and it's when I started doing strength training that was targeted to the weak areas of my body that I really made progress.
Now, what do you mean by strength training?
Okay, for example, it can be either with weights, or it can be with the weight of the body. Even doing a push-up, for example, is using your body to strengthen your shoulders. You can do hand weights. A lot of things, when you go grocery shopping and you lift things off the shelf, you're doing strength training for your wrist.
So get bigger cans.
Right, get
okay.
Bigger cans. And then also you can use resistance machines. They find them at the gym. Some of these rowing types, but you have to make sure you keep your back straight, can help strengthen your back because that's one place where you tend to lose a lot of bone fast.
You know, I'm a true believer what you're saying because what happened, yes, I did the supplements, yes, I did the exercise, but because I had a couple of herniated discs in my neck from a car accident, I went ahead and started doing 3 times a week. I would go in and do a half-hour cardio at a club and also then weight training. Now, not real heavy weights. The most I ever lift is about 25 pounds.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But I do the 5 and 10-pound weights to the side and everything to hold the so I wouldn't have to have any surgery done on the herniated disc. And those have been holding for like 6 years now. I haven't had to have any no problems. But maybe that's the reason I'm helping with the osteoporosis, too.
Oh, yes. That will do it.
I'll be doing it.
But, I mean, that is crucial because your muscles send signals to your bones saying, hey, you know, you've got to keep up and be in shape so we can meet the stress that this person is putting on us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're trying to do it now with even mechanical signals to the muscles. And they're working on systems. There's a dynamic motion therapy that just started in Europe and in Canada. And it involves, you know, standing on a mechanical device that will help stimulate your muscles and bones. But they're still in the, stages of testing in the United States.
And I'm so glad you said about getting your records. I want all my records. It's like, you know, if I'm paying you for this stuff, then I should have these records so I can kind of keep track of everything. It's not that I don't trust anybody, but, you know, technicians do make mistakes sometimes.
Right, and, you know, you can look at that on your test. It has images, And it should be a report of about at least 3 or 4 pages and sometimes more. And you can determine where are the weak areas and where are the strong areas. Now, in my case, I had too much bone density at the bottom of my lumbar spine. And I checked with professionals and found out that I was putting too much stress on my lower back. And so, in a sense, that not only helped me improve my bone density, but saved my back because I started walking differently and I stopped doing exercises that aggravated that area.
And that's the other thing, too. If you go to a club, make sure, or any kind of exercise, you know, family fitness, doesn't matter, but make sure you have somebody there who knows training so that they can tell you what parts of the body will be helped by what machinery or what weights and everything. Because a lot of times you go there and they say, oh, I'm going to exercise. Well, it may not be helping you.
Right. It could be hurting you. And you should also have somebody check your form to make sure that you're doing it correctly.
Yeah. You know, we sometimes take for granted that, oh, well, I'm just going to go in and start exercising. I'd always done exercising, like, every day. I do about an hour and a half. I do about 9 miles on a stationary bike. I do stretches, and then I go for a kind of a walk jog. But I'm very careful about the jog part of it because I had a physician tell me that if you do too much running, two things can happen. Your knees and your ankles, that's when those two things go. And the other is with women, if it's too much jarring, that you can actually, as you get older, cause incontinence.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's better to do a power walk, you know, and just be very, very vigorous.
Mm-hmm.
And he said you get about 80 to 85% of the same benefits that you would if you ran.
Yes, and you know, when you're doing that power work, try to bring your toes up, and that'll help prevent you from tripping, because a lot of times we lose the ability to bring our toes up high,
yeah.
And we tend to just walk flat-footed.
Been there, done that. You know, especially, you know those the sneakers, and I still call them sneakers, you know, the sneakers that have, it's like a little wedge at the toe. Sometimes that's worse. I mean, that kind of catches on things.
Uh-huh.
And I've done that. I've taken a tumble over my dogs and everything. So I've gotten the flatter shoes at the toe part without that little extra bridge. Because that little extra bridge, I took a couple of tumbles and I said, I don't need this. I don't want to damage myself anymore for my life. Now, when you change the osteoporosis, that's an ongoing thing. I mean, you don't just say, well, I'm all better now, so no, I don't have to do this anymore.
No, you have to continue the prevention methods, and you have to continue exercise, you know, throughout your life. Otherwise, you will go back to losing bone.
And the other thing, too, I found out, this was strange to me. Diabetes, I was told, and I've had somebody on the show about this several times, saying that it is caused by being overweight. And yet, I know some overweight people, and it's helped them with their bone density because it's more weight to carry around, so they're getting that exercise.
That's right. That's about the only advantage of being overweight.
Isn't that strange? I mean, you excuse my language, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Right. But people who are very thin-boned who are especially underweight are more at risk for osteoporosis.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Now, do you have a website, by the way?
Yes, it's called avoidboneloss.com.
Avoidboneloss.com,
just as it's spelled, I mean, you know, sounds, avoidboneloss.com. Gives a lot of free information on preventing osteoporosis.
Right.
Also tells you, too, how you can get my book, Osteoporosis Prevention, A Proactive Approach to Strong Bones and Good Health.
Okay, osteoporosis.
And you can go to major bookstores and ask for it. If it's not on the shelf, they can order it for you, like I know Borders and Barnes & Noble can. You can order it on, you know, over the internet too. And BarnesandNoble.com does have it.
All I can say, Renee, is we got to keep beating people over the head because I don't know how old you are, but you know I'm up there, and it's like I'm not going to go into old age so beaten up that I can't enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think, you know, we're told now that we should be able to live well into our 90s with no problems, but I don't want to be some doddering thing crawling around and not being able to enjoy life.
Right. So, sounds like you're doing the right things.
Well, thank you, Renee. Come back and visit again sometime, okay?
And thanks for having me on your show.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that's what it's all about, folks. I'm telling you right now. You have to make a difference in your life. In order to make that difference, you got to know people like Renee. Again, that's avoidboneloss.com. and it's called Osteoporosis Prevention. And I think you'll get a lot of great information from her book. And just to kind of get you started, I mean, that's the name of the game, isn't it? If you get started and you know what to do with your life, then you got it made.
I love the colorful clothes she wears and the way the sunlight plays upon her head. I hear the sound of her gentle words on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up vibration. She's giving me medication.
Well, have you ever wished you could travel with others without wishing they'd stayed home? Boy, you might have already done that this year. Well, not anymore. Now you have the answers, because maybe Nardi Davidson is going to come to your rescue. Travel with Others is a survival guide for traveling with your spouse, your lover, your boss, your friends, your kids, your grandkids, someone else's kids, in-laws. And don't forget, you also have to worry about your pets, like Felix and Fido, to go along with that. Nadine, nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Nice being here.
Oh, it is so wonderful. It's been a long time since we've talked.
Yes, it has. I hope you've been on a many wonderful vacations since then.
Well, you know, a lot of busy stuff, but I'm glad to have you back with us, because we're right in the beginning of that season time when people are going out. And I know that I guess I have to understand who I am as a traveler first, right?
That's right, because I have found in my 25 years of being a travel consultant that most people tend to fall into 9 different categories of traveler.
Okay.
And if you're what I call the comfort seeker, you know, the person whose idea of roughing it is a 4-star hotel instead of a 5-star hotel, then you may not get along with the adventurer travel too well,
mm-hmm.
and you might be married to him.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because I've talked to a lot of people who do a lot of camping, and they absolutely adore camping. But I said, my idea of camping is a hotel room with a martini in my hand, and then come and tell me about it.
That, and you see, you would not want to travel with those people, because you would not get along, or you would feel deprived of your martini and your king-size bed.
There you go. Exactly. Okay, so we have to determine who we are first. Is there a way, though, to travel with people who have some other ideas? Can you kind of lump things together?
Yes, you can compromise most of the time. And one of the ways that you do this is, first of all, to recognize your differences.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever somebody needs in travel, you know, we all travel for different reasons. Some of us want to renew our spirits or see something new. Some people just want to relax and just veg out. So you have to recognize what your needs are and what the other person's needs are.
Okay.
So that, and decide up front how you're going to satisfy both those needs.
Well,
before you get on the trip together, so you're not bickering through the trip.
Aren't cruises a good idea? Because there's usually something for everybody.
And that's why they're so popular.
Okay.
Because nobody has to entertain somebody else. You know, the person who wants to sit on deck and read a book by the pool can do that. And the person who wants to, you know, run miles around the top deck and be in the fitness room or the spa can do it. And the person who wants to be up all night dancing and gambling can do it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. We took my mother and father-in-law on a cruise for their 50th wedding anniversary. And they laughed at us every morning because my husband and I did the run before we did breakfast and did the, you know, workout. And yet they didn't have to. And then we would meet for lunch or whatever. So you could kind of separate things out so you don't get on each other's nerves.
That's right. And there's something for everybody. And that's one of the reasons that cruises are more popular than ever. And I think getting more popular every day. But, you know, sometimes you can't take a cruise to the place you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So then, for example, if you're going to Paris, you don't want to spend, you know, a half an hour in Paris. This is a place that needs a week or two or maybe a month.
Mm-hmm.
So this is when you travel with somebody who likes to go and see museums and castles and historical things, and they're traveling with someone who doesn't enjoy that, this is where they may run into trouble.
Yeah.
So that's when you need to compromise up front and say, okay, I'm going to go see this museum, and if you don't want to go, maybe that's the day you can go shopping. Or so you plan your time so that neither one of you is saying, why am I wasting my time, my precious vacation time, doing something I don't enjoy?
Right.
And the other person is not saying, why am I deprived? I came all the way here and I don't have time to see this.
The other thing, too, is, and I know we need to save money, because especially if you're going in an automobile or an SUV or a motorhome, you're going to be spending an arm and a leg and probably the other leg, too, to afford the gasoline prices. But should you opt for separate rooms if you kind of annoy each other?
Absolutely. Some people should not be sharing a room at all, even if they're married to each other sometimes, because if one snores and the other one can't get enough rest or sleep,
mm-hmm.
then they usually need to have a suite or two rooms so that they can both get a good night's sleep. And this is not an uncommon problem. This is a common problem. And so instead of being miserable on your trip, it's better to, even if you have to, for example, take a suite where you'll pay maybe more money, maybe shorten your vacation, but at least the time that you're away, you will enjoy it instead of, you know, being bickering about who kept who awake all night.
Now, they have a lot of places like the Amira Suites and some of these other hotels. They have, a refrigerator, a little microwave,
right.
and have a living room and a living room and a bedroom. So there's a separation there, and you got more space.
Right, and you know what? Most of the time, they're not more money than a regular hotel.
Yeah, really.
So if you can opt for these types of places, the key is you want to make sure there's a door that separates the living room from the bedroom if there is a snoring problem, so that you can close that door off.
Great. Now, a lot of times, and parents, and I think all parents do this at least a little bit, if you have older kids and then you got little ones, you kind of expect the older kids to watch after the little ones, and sometimes you got to give them their own space.
Absolutely, especially if they're teenagers, because teenagers have their own idea of what's fun, and it doesn't usually match the parents' ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a hard age to travel with sometimes, because you can say, hey, let's go on this cruise, and they'll say, oh, boring, boring, unless there's teenagers around.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to convince them that there will be other, you know, kids of their age, and that there will be activities, maybe it's a river rafting excursion while they're in Alaska, or something that's going to entice them and be their idea of fun. So the older the child, the more important it is to get their input on the trip.
Now, what if you have a teenager who is so in love and they don't want to go?
Because they're in love with someone back home?
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple things you can do. Number one, maybe you'll invite, if you like the other friend, maybe you'll invite them on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
This can be a little tricky. I know of a case where the parents did just that, and they went up to Lake Arrowhead, and guess what? The boy found another girl that he was more interested in.
Uh-oh.
And he totally ignored the girlfriend that they had invited on the trip.
Oh, my God.
So she was not feeling happy, and the parents thought that this wasn't a very nice way for their son to, you know, he had invited her, and now he was ignoring her. This was not proper behavior. So it actually sort of cured him of ever doing that again.
I bet.
And so sometimes it can backfire. But sometimes it works, you know, if you set the ground rules very,
yeah,
very strictly. And there's other kids as well, maybe other siblings and
now,
so forth.
You do bring up a good point, though. What if your teenager does fall in love with somebody on the road? How do you handle that?
Well, you know, every situation is different, and you need to know your own kid. I know one case where, you know, the child had, well, she was a teenager, and she'd been overweight most of her life. And she finally lost some weight just before they went on this trip. And for the first time, when they went to England, she met a boy who was very interested in her. And they were supposed to go on a cruise in Athens. Well, the father ended up canceling the cruise and staying in England so his daughter could spend more time with his fellow. And the reason is he thought this was very important to her self-esteem. That so for that particular individual, you know, they ended up canceling their trip.
Wow.
But most of the time, you're not going to do that.
I don't think
so. You're going to say, you know what? Life moves on to the next city and the next romance.
Sometimes
you've
got to put your foot down.
Get over it.
You've got to put your foot down sometimes, you know? Now, what about traveling with a lover?
Well, this has its own little set of pitfalls, possible pitfalls. You know, it's a great way for people to get to know each other, really know each other.
Mm-hmm.
But they should not go on a trip together prematurely, especially if they haven't worked out a very important question up front, which is who pays for what? Because most of us bring to every relationship ideas from the last relationship. So if your previous boyfriend paid for everything and the new boyfriend or is used to sharing or costs, you know, where you both share and everything,
mm-hmm.
that might, you know, carry some problems because you anticipate that you're going on this trip, you're not going to spend any money because everything's going to be taken care of. And then the other person is upset with you because, you know, hey, you could chip in here.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then you have tensions and bad feelings, and there's nothing worse than being stranded somewhere
mm-hmm.
if you don't have the money for the trip yourself and not wanting to be with somebody. So, number one, make sure it's very clear up front, and I'd even put it in writing in an email or something. You know, gee, I'm really excited we're going on this trip together. I'll pay for your airline ticket if you can, you know, pay half of the hotel room. Or if you can buy your hotel, your airplane ticket, I'll take care of all the food. You know, make it very clear what
Good.
You expect.
Good point. Good point. Now, you mentioned earlier that there are 9 different travel types. Can we kind of fly through those?
Yeah. Well, I feel that I am what I call the travel enthusiast. That's the person who just loves to travel anywhere, anytime. Loves to sightsee, go to museums, see all the historical places, and go, go, go.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, of course, the relaxer, who's the opposite. The person whose idea of the person's vacation is to do as little as possible. You know, maybe go to the spa. Then we have the shopper, the person who wants to spend all their time shopping on the trip. And in fact, if there's no good shopping, the place is boring to them. Then we have the beach bum. This is like the relaxer, but they have to have a beach. And usually the beach one wants warm weather, warm tropical water with lots of water sports.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the sportsman. And this is the person, the only way to entice them on a trip is to promise them the biggest fish if they're a fisherman or, you know, the greatest 18 holes of golf.
Yeah.
Whatever their sport is, that's why they travel. That's their motivation. And the adventurer, this is the person who, it's not enough to go see the Himalayas. They have to trek through the Himalayas.
Oh, boy.
You know, just go look at the river. They've got a river raft down, you know, class 3 rapids.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have some stimulation, something adventuresome, something that gets their juices going. And the opposite is the comfort seeker, the person who likes to luxuriate when they travel.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be pampered. They want to stay in lovely hotels and have gourmet dinners and maybe go to the spa.
Gotcha.
And there's another type that's kind of rare, and that's called a discoverer. This is the person who always needs to be first, you know, to do anything, at least in their own peer group.
Mm-hmm.
And these will be the people who will pay to be the first travelers to in faith. Or go into some remote valley of New Guinea or do something that most people don't do.
Gotcha.
And if you're married to one of these people, you could be taking your life in your hands
yeah.
if you travel with them.
Oh, who knows where they're going to go, huh?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's why most of them will belong to some geographical group that only, you know, they only tend to travel with their own kind and enjoy this kind of discovery type of travel where you may be
Got it.
In primitive surroundings.
Now, that's what, 7?
I think that's 9.
Was it 9? Oh, okay, we got them all. Okay. So, again, know who you're going with. Set some ground rules at the beginning. Those are musts, right?
That's right. Because, you know what, as long as you know what to expect, you tend to be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's when something that happens that upsets your plan, that you don't get what you wanted, that tends to upset us and put a damper on the trip. And,
yeah.
You know, travel costs money. This is maybe your only 2 weeks of a year you're going to have. You don't want to ruin it with arguments or with, you know, why are we here? You want to enjoy every minute of it. You want it to be not only an exciting vacation for you, but for the other person you're with or the other people you're with. Because it's a great boon to be able to make somebody else happy.
Well, and you don't want to be so doggone stressed out that you got to come home and go back to work to rest.
Right.
And I've seen that. I've done it.
And, of course, you don't want to ruin your relationships either.
Right.
And sometimes that happens. You know, I've seen it happen where friends will travel with friends, and then they're not friends anymore.
There you go. So you have to really determine.
They accommodate each other up front.
So you need to determine, do I really want to travel with this person, or do I want to make an enemy here? You know?
That's right. And if you're very different, you probably don't want to travel with them.
Really?
You know, people who see each other socially, they think they know each other.
Mm.
But it's totally different. When you get on the road with someone for 24 hours a day, and then suddenly the things that you like about that person, like I know a couple who traveled with their attorney and his wife. Well, the attorney was a good attorney. But every time they checked into a hotel, he would negotiate with the people at the desk to try and get a better rate or get a better room. And the other couple was always embarrassed by this. They just wanted to get to their room, get on with their vacation, instead of spending a half an hour trying to re-argue the price.
Amazing.
But the attorney thrived on this. He loved it. He said if he got $5 off, he was excited.
Makes his day.
So something that can be a great quality on one side may not be a good quality when you're traveling together.
I hear you. Now, I want to make sure, do you have a website?
Yes, it's called www.travelwithothers.com.
Travelwithothers.com. And what about the book itself, Travel With Others Without Wishing They'd Stayed Home? Do we get it?
That's available through online bookstores or through bookstores or by calling toll-free to 888-837-BOOK.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's easy. Okay. So, again, know what you're getting yourself into. Determine where you're going. Make sure everybody's going to be happy, or else you're going to come back so miserable and so tired that it's not going to be a vacation anymore.
Right. But be prepared to give up something to get something.
Okay.
In other words, to give something and to get something. To accommodate each other.
And I think that's the important key more than anything else, because people tend to have we're a little selfish. Oh, I want to enjoy this. This is my vacation. Well, if you're going with somebody else, it changes. Now it's our vacation, not anymore my vacation.
Right, and different people need different things from their vacation.
Okay.
And you have to recognize that difference is as important to them as it is to you.
Sounds like a winner. You know, as always, you always have good information for us. We're going to have you come back, and then we can, maybe a little bit later on, we can talk more about other types of things, maybe some good travel tips and some ideas, because a lot of people don't have, like, 2 weeks to go on a vacation.
That's right.
And they have maybe just a couple of days, or maybe they can do 2 or 3 short trips, and maybe you can give us some tips on that.
Would love to.
Terrific. Nadine, you stay well. You always do a great job, and thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Mary Jane.
Take care, my love.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Nadine Nardi Davidson, and it's called Travel With Others Without Wishing They'd Stayed Home. And boy, I'll tell you, I think every one of us has been on that vacation, whether we're kids with our parents or parents with the kids or whatever. Again, the book is available at any online. It's called Travel With Others Without Wishing They'd Stayed Home. Not you, but they'd stayed home. Or you can go to the website, travelwithothers.com. Or you can order it at 888-837-BOOK, 888-837-BOOK. Talking about traveling, how about on a jumbo jet?
Hello?
Well, that may be the way you like it, especially if it's a huge jet. Can you believe 450 seats in one plane? That's a lot of folks. Well, you can believe it. The Boeing 747 came to be in 1969. Now, this November, it's going to be happening, 450 seats. And the man whose life has been aviation and one of the most celebrated engineers of the 20th century, Joe Sutter, is going to be there, I'm sure. Now, in his book, he tells the tale of 747, the world's first jumbo jet. Joe, what a pleasure to have you with us on Pop Off.
Thank you very much, Mary Jane.
Now, listen, I got to tell people this history because it's incredible to be able to talk with you. I mean, you're the man. Born in 1921, you lived close to Boeing as a little boy. You saw the evolution of planes from open cockpits and silk scarves to high-performance jets. What a life.
I really got intrigued with airplanes and why they flew well and some not so well. And it maybe I got the right genes, but I always felt I wanted to design airplanes, and luckily that's what my career ended up doing.
Now, when did you go to work for Boeing?
I was in the Navy during World War II, mainly on destroyer escorts, and I came to Boeing, I think, in February of 46 after I got out of the Navy.
Now, you actually headed up the design team for the 747.
Yes, yeah, I was head of the engineering department, and we started out small, but at the middle of the design, when we were really producing drawings, I had 4,500 people reporting to me.
Oh, my God. Now, you actually, the first Boeing went to Pan Am, Pan American, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, which doesn't exist anymore, by the way, folks. For you younger folks out there, there used to be an airline called Pan American Airlines. So, when you designed it, how many seats were in the first Boeing?
The first 747 had about 350 seats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the one that's coming up in November, is that like the mother of them all?
Well, no, it's you know, the airplane that's flying today on the airlines is the 747-400, which carries about a little over 400 seats and has more range and more efficiency. It's been around for 15 years. The airplane coming up called the Dash 8 has another 50 people, and we'll have another 500 miles of range, and we have a reduction in fuel capacity, a new interior, a new cockpit for the pilots. It's pretty much a real redo of the airplane. It'll look like the current 747, but it'll be a much more capable airplane.
Now, have you actually seen it yet, or are they still...
No, it's just in the drawing stage now.
Really?
It won't roll out for, 2.5 years or so.
Oh, okay. So then they're just initiating this in November.
Pardon?
In November, they're just kind of show what's coming.
Yes, yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. When you see the way we travel today, I've got to be real honest with you. The first time I ever traveled was back in... I guess I got my first plane ride in 1969, and that I went cross-country. And it used to be very, very exclusive to be able to get onto an airline. And I kind of call the airlines anymore the Greyhound of the skies. It just has changed drastically.
What happened was the 747, because of its efficiency and capacity, allowed the airlines to drop the airfares by about 30%. And that allowed many, many more people to fly, so... air transportation really took off with the advent of the 747, and that's one reason why it's been out there for 35 years. It's been improved over time, but it'll be around for another 35 years with these improvements that they can make to the airplane, because it has the efficiency and the capabilities that the airlines really need.
Now, I know they're bigger, and I know they're more efficient, but doggone it, they keep stuffing us into smaller and smaller spaces. Now, I'm a little person. I'm not a huge person. And I don't have much leg room. I feel sorry for anybody over 6 feet tall.
The thing that's happened is with fuel prices at $70 a barrel and with all the other costs way up there, the only way the airlines can make money is to tighten up the seats more than they should for comfort. And When Boeing brings out new airplanes, they usually put in more generous seat and more seat space, and the airlines look at, well, if we crowd them in a little bit more, we can make enough money to buy some more airplanes or to make some profit, and it always ends up that they have a heavy load in every airplane. But what the situation you describe, it gets to the point where it's not very comfortable.
Yeah. Whatever happened to, and I remember as a kid growing up, we used to think, man, we're going to have these high-speed jets that are going to get us over the seas in an hour, you know, really, really fast. Of course, we had one, but didn't make it. I wonder, was it because of the expensive part of it?
Yes. The Concorde, which was built in Europe, there were only 16 of them built, and the reason is it could do the job. It could fly the North Atlantic. But it's a 100-passenger airplane. If that airplane left London and flew to New York, it'd carry 100 passengers. It would burn a certain amount of fuel. A 747 would be, instead of 3.5 hours, it'd be 6 hours. But it would burn the same amount of fuel. So it carries four times the number of passengers for the same fuel. And fuel is a big expense. So the supersonic transports, at least of that vintage, were not economic. And even today, it'd be very difficult to design an economic supersonic transport.
It is amazing. I guess we'll just have to wait till Star Trek, where we just go, in the transporter and just get zapped from one place to another. That'll be the fastest way, huh?
Well, I think there's a difficulty there. And that is, if they develop the transporter, they still haven't found out a way to send a martini with the passenger.
Right. Absolutely. Did you hear the story? Now, they're saying that it probably wasn't true, but they actually alluded to having certain areas in the plane for people to actually stand up during the flight. Now, this is a short flight. I mean, maybe half an hour, hour and a half, not long flights. Do you think they would ever come up with something like that?
Well, over in Europe, they're building an airplane bigger than the 747, and they're talking about stand-up bars and libraries and beauty salons and all those things. But what happens when the airlines get them, they have to put seats in the airplane to make money. So all those frills, if you will, sound good in commercial advertising, but they never last.
Yeah.
We had some of that. We even had a piano in the 747 in the back of it with a stand-up bar. But the airline that did that, I didn't even keep it for a year. And I always regret, I wanted to buy that piano when they took it out because it would be the only FAA-certified piano in the world, but they junked it.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my God, that would be, what a collectible.
Yeah, that would be something.
Wow. What do you think is going to be, just projecting, because you've seen so many changes. I mean, it's got to be incredible in your mind, the changes that you have seen in aviation. What do you see happening down the line?
Well, right now, there's a big trend away from big airplanes. There's still a need for 747s, and especially as a freighter. But Boeing is developing an airplane called the 787. It's all composite and all electric. And again, it's a step forward in efficiency. And they're starting out with fairly comfortable seating arrangements and whatnot, which I think will disappear. But that airplane, carrying 250, 275 people, will fly 8,000 nautical miles. It will be able to go from almost any point to any other point in the world. And people don't want to go through hubs like London and New York unless that's their destination.
Wow.
So the trend is to give the people the ability to go from where they are to where they want to be without stopping. And again, increase efficiency so ticket prices don't have to get too big.
I can't imagine how the airlines are really staying afloat. We have enough trouble just trying to get our automobiles or SUVs or motorhomes across country. But to be able to afford the jet fuel for these huge jets to keep them in the air has got to be an unbelievable job.
It's a real push on their part to be able to still operate profitably. Luckily, the airplanes are efficient enough so that they're hanging in there, but it'd be nice if oil prices would drop a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you look at the air transportation system, I don't know how many. I'll guess there may be 400 or 500 747s in the air right now, carrying 300 350 pastors all over the points of the world. They do it very safely, and they're taking care of an enormous amount of people. I was standing in the Narita airport one night waiting for my flight home. I had 2 hours there, and I was tired of reading, so I counted 747s landing. I counted 55 747s landing. 55 747s landing in 2 hours, and I determined that, you know, like between 15 and 25,000 people were coming into Tokyo just in the two-hour period. That's what these airplanes can do.
That's incredible. Well, we have to. I mean, there's no other way. We are such a mobile society. I mean, there are people who are what we call bi-coastal. They actually work on two coasts.
Yes, yes, and that's happening more and more. People live in Seattle and fly down and do their work in San Francisco and get home for dinner.
Mm, that's amazing. Now, I want to make sure, how did they get the book, 747?
It's at Barnes & Noble, and you can buy it online, and I think Borders has it. All of the major bookstores have it. But you also can get it on Amazon and those other online people.
Do you have a website, Joe?
I got an email address.
Oh, well, no. I mean, I just, you know, in case somebody wanted to ask you any questions or anything, I'm sure there's some really, you know, incredibly wonderful people out there who have, you know the history of the Boeing and might have some questions. But if you don't have a website, I don't want to give out your email because you might get flooded with stuff.
Oh, man, yeah, they're going to choke up. No, they can tell them if they're really interested, they can write me a letter. I like letters.
Cool. That's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. No. Do you kind of still keep touch with Boeing to find out what's happening out there?
Well, I've still consulted for them, and I've been helping them a lot on this 747-8 because I still have an interest in what happens in the future of that airplane. And that keeps me in contact with the young engineers, and I keep visiting my friends in the airline. So I can't play golf every day, so it's a nice combination, and I enjoy doing it.
I think it's terrific. I bet you when you walk in, those young engineers just about get down and say, oh, well, here comes the man. Here's the guru.
Well, some of them do. Yeah, I get along with them pretty well.
Well, they should. I mean, you go back, as I said, it's got to be an astounding background to be able to see the changes from open cockpits and, you know, the Red Barons of the world to what you're seeing today, which is high-performance jets that do incredible things.
It's amazing how fast aviation has gone by. The Wright brothers flew the first airplane a little over 100 years ago, and now look at it. You put people on the moon, and we carried an enormous amount of the people living on this planet. We're hauling a tremendous amount of freight. Airplanes have come a long way, and knock on wood, but now it's a very, very safe way of getting people around. And I think you got to give credit to our FAA, to the people like Boeing and Douglas that designed them, and also give credit to these airlines who are operating under enormous pressures on high fuel prices and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very, very safe system.
Well, I thank you so much for being with us and for doing the job that you did, because we would not be where we are today were it not for you.
Well, thank you for wanting me, Mary Jane.
And I hope you'll come back and visit again.
I'll be glad to.
Take care, Joe.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Again, that's Joe Sutter, and he is the man who led the team that established the 747, the world's first jumbo jet. What a life to be able to... Ah, this has got to be incredible. Talking about incredible and fantastic, it's been a super-duper week being with you on Pop Off. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. Kick back and relax a little bit. Enjoy. Don't forget, I'd love to hear from you. Email me, MaryJane@popoff.com. 2 P's, 2 F's. Want to hear your comments and some ideas for the show. All this is all about you. Pop Off is our show. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, you dare to dream. That's what life is all about.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.